Hello and welcome to the Arizona Daily Sun. I'm Gary. We'll be reading from the Arizona Daily Sun, dated November the 20th. Moving to the front page. First 100 days, citizens want focus on inflation. U.S. residents consider inflation as the leading issue President-elect Donald Trump should tackle during his first 100 days in office, according to a Reuters Ipsos poll published on Tuesday. About 35% of respondents in the three-day poll, which closed on Sunday, picked inflation as the area Trump should focus on, compared to 30% who said immigration and 27% who said jobs and the general economy. Another 23% said Trump should focus on unifying the nation. Smaller share said he should focus on taxes, crime, or foreign conflict. Trump defeated Democrat Kamala Harris in the November 5th election, and his party won control of the U.S. Senate and held its grip on the U.S. House of Representatives. Trump has vowed to use the Republican sweep to enact significant policy changes, including new tariffs on imports, tax cuts, and the mass deportation of immigrants. Economists say an aggressive tariff plan could push prices higher as companies pass on to consumers the cost of tariffs. That might mean rekindling the higher rates of inflation that plagued the administration of Democratic President Joe Biden and helped Trump win this year's election. Inflation surged in 2021 and 2022. As the global supply chain was disrupted by the COVID-19 pandemic, price increases have moderated recently, but the annual rate of inflation remains elevated. Only a marginal 1% of survey respondents said Trump should turn his attention to international trade and tariffs. The poll, which surveyed 1,014 U.S. adults nationwide, has a margin of error of about 3 percentage points. Republicans in the poll were most interested in Trump focusing on immigration, with 56% of them selecting that option compared to 11% of Democrats. The largest share of Democrats, 33%, said Trump should attempt to unify the populace. About 12% of Republicans said the same. Moving to our next article. Los Angeles passes sanctuary city ordinance. Los Angeles City Council on Tuesday unanimously passed a sanctuary city ordinance to protect immigrants living in the city, a policy that would prohibit the use of city resources and personnel to conduct federal immigration enforcement. The move by the Southern California City, the second most populated city in the U.S. after New York City, follows President-elect Donald Trump's vow to carry out mass deportation of immigrants. The ordinance codifies the protection of migrants in municipal law. Councilmember Paul Krikorian said the measure addresses the need to ensure that our immigrant community here in Los Angeles understands that we understand their fear. Pro-immigration protesters spoke on the steps of Los Angeles City Hall before the vote, holding up signs saying Los Angeles Sanctuary City Now. The city is home to 1.3 million immigrants, council members said, without specifying how many entered the country legally. 11 states have, to varying degrees, taking steps to reducing cooperation with federal immigration enforcement, according to the nonprofit Immigration Legal Resources Center. Trump, winner of the November 5th election, takes office on January 20th. The Trump transition team did not respond to a request for comment. Our next front page article. U.S. imposes sanctions on senior Hamas officials. United States on Tuesday imposed sanctions on 6 senior Hamas officials, U.S. Department of Treasury said. Sanctions targeted the group's representatives abroad, a senior member of the Hamas military wing, and those involved in supporting fundraising efforts for the group and weapons smuggling into Gaza. Hamas continues to rely on key officials who seemingly maintain legitimate public-facing roles within the group, yet who facilitate their terrorist activities, represent their interest abroad, and coordinate the transfer of money and goods into Gaza, said Bradley Smith, U.S. Treasury Acting Undersecretary for Terrorism and Financial Intelligence. Treasury remains committed to disrupting Hamas's efforts to secure additional revenue and holding those who facilitate the group's terrorist activities to account. Hamas condemned the sanctions in a statement that called on the U.S. administration to review this criminal policy and stop its blind bias toward the terrorist-occupied entity. Among those targeted was Abdu al-Rahman Ismail and al-Rahman Ghanemat, a longtime member of Hamas's military wing who is now based in Turkey, the Treasury said, accusing him of being involved in multiple attempted and successful terrorist attacks. Two other officials based in Turkey, a member based in Gaza, who has participated in Hamas's engagements with Russia, and a leader authorized to speak publicly on behalf of the group and who previously oversaw border crossing at Gaza, were also among those targeted, according to the Treasury. The statement by Hamas said the Treasury Department lists are based on misleading and false statements and foundations aimed at distorting the image of the movement leaders, while ignoring the imposition of sanctions on the occupied leaders who committed the most heinous war crimes. The U.S. had warned Turkey against hosting Hamas leadership, saying Washington does not believe leaders of a terrorist organization should be living comfortably. Asked about reports that some Hamas leaders had moved to Turkey from Qatar, U.S. State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller did not confirm the reports, but he said he was not in a position to dispute them. He said Washington will make clear to Turkey's government that there can be no more business as usual with Hamas. Moving to our next article. Lawsuits allege officials ignored red flag laws prior to Club Q shooting. Victims of a deadly 2022 shooting attack on a gay nightclub in Colorado have sued local authorities, accusing them of failing to enforce a red flag gun law they said could have prevented the violence. The two lawsuits were announced on Tuesday, the second anniversary of the November 19, 2022 shooting at Club Q in Colorado Springs that killed 5 people and injured another 25. Plaintiffs, including victims and some family members of victims, alleged former El Paso County Sheriff Bill Elder and the county's Board of Commissioners failed to use Colorado's red flag law, despite credible and actionable information about the shooter's escalating threats and violent behavior. The legislation allows courts to issue orders removing firearms from individuals considered at risk of harming themselves or others. The El Paso County Sheriff's Office and the Board of Commissioners said they had no comment on the lawsuit. Red flag laws across the country have been touted by gun safety advocates as crucial tools to prevent mass shootings. In Colorado, a judge can issue a temporary order that firearms should be confiscated for up to 2 weeks until a court hearing is held to determine whether to extend the order up to a year. The state has seen relatively few petitions for such orders since it passed its law in January of 2020. Earlier this year, Anderson Lee Aldrich, the convicted shooter in the Club Q attack, pled guilty to federal hate crime and gun charges and received multiple sentences of life in prison with possibility of release. The most serious crimes to which Aldrich pled guilty included charges of willful willful killing someone because of their sexual orientation or gender identity. Aldrich in 2023 was sentenced to life in prison after pleading guilty in state court to 5 first-degree murder counts and 46 attempted murder counts. He planned and carried out the attack after entering the club armed with a semi-automatic rifle and a handgun during a drag show. The rampage was stopped after 2 patrons managed to wrestle Aldrich's weapons away. Aldrich was known to law enforcement, having been arrested in 2021. His mother had reported that Aldrich had threatened to detonate a bomb and harm her with multiple weapons, according to a press release from the El Paso County Sheriff's Office. Aldrich's mother declined to testify for the prosecution, and the 2021 case was dismissed. In the lawsuits, plaintiff argued that the sheriffs acted recklessly and with a conscious disregard for the risk posed to Club Q patrons by failing to invoke Colorado's red flag law to disarm Aldrich after the 2021 incident. The County Board of Commissioners, the lawsuit said, were wrong by adopting a resolution opposing the state's red flag statute, which directly undermines the law's effectiveness. Moving to our next article, Trump plans to repeal Biden's fuel efficiency standards. President-elect Donald Trump's incoming administration plans to target federal regulations championed by President Joe Biden that aim to make automobiles more fuel efficient and incentivize a shift toward electric vehicles, according to 2 sources in contact with Trump's transition team. The move appears aimed at satisfying the Trump campaign promise to end the EV mandate and would replicate a similar move during the first Trump administration to dismantle Obama-era vehicle efficiency rules. Although no such EV mandate exists, the Biden administration regulation would require automakers to shift at least 35% of production to EVs to meet 2032 requirements and encourage a gradual phase out of the production of vehicles that run on fossil fuels. The incoming administration plans to weaken standards on fuel efficiency requirements and tailpipe emissions finalized earlier this year by U.S. National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Environmental Protection Agency, according to the sources. One of the sources said Trump is expected to formally direct those agencies to reconsider the Biden regulations. The effort would run counter to the interests of EV maker Tesla Inc., run by Trump backer Elon Musk, which profits from selling regulatory credits to traditional automakers who cannot comply with stricter vehicle emission regulations. The Trump transition team did not respond to a request for comment. The move to undo Biden's vehicle efficiency rules was first reported by Bloomberg. Last week, Reuters exclusively reported the Trump transition team is planning to kill the $7,500 consumer tax credit for electric vehicle purchases, another move that likely would show an already stalling U.S. EV transition. During the first Trump administration, it took nearly 3 years to overturn similar Obama-era regulations. After Trump called for a review of the rules in early 2017, NHTSA and EPA began the formal process of rewriting the rules in 2018. It took until March of 2020 for both agencies to finalize less stringent rules. One of the sources said the move is designed to appease automakers who have complained the Biden regulations are too onerous. The fuel economy and vehicle emission standards finalized by the Biden administration this year were less stringent than originally proposed after automakers lobbied for revisions. General Motors, Ford, Stellantis, Tesla, and Alliance for Automotive Innovation, a trade group representing most major automakers, except Tesla, did not respond to requests for comment. After Trump's first election victory in 2016, Automakers pushed to ease the Obama-era rules, arguing they were too expensive and would hamper American job growth. The calculus is different now, said Seth Goldstein, a Morningstar research services analyst, as Detroit automakers have been investing heavily in EVs. They're a lot more advanced in their strategy, he said. Moving to our next article, Commission pushes Manhattan Project-style AI initiative. A U.S. Congressional Commission on Tuesday proposed a Manhattan Project-style initiative to fund the development of AI systems that will be as intelligent as humans amid intensifying competition with China over advanced technology. The bipartisan U.S.-China Economic and Security Review Commission stressed that public-private partnerships are key in advancing artificial general intelligence, but did not give any specific investment strategies as it released its annual report. Manhattan Project was a large-scale collaboration between the U.S. government and the private sector during World War II that produced the first atomic bombs. We've seen throughout history that countries that are first to exploit periods of rapid technological change can often cause shifts in the global balance of power, said Jacob Helberg, the USCC commissioner and senior advisor to software company Plantar CEO. China is racing toward AGI. It's critical that we take them extremely seriously, Helberg added, noting that energy infrastructure is a significant bottleneck for training large AI models. Herberg suggested that streamlining the permitting process for data centers might be an example of how a public-private partnership could accelerate AI development. ChatGPT maker OpenAI, which last week released a proposed blueprint for U.S. AI strategy, also has urged additional government funding for artificial intelligence. USCC, established by Congress in 2000, provides annual recommendations on U.S.-China relations. The commission aims to guide lawmakers on issues of economic and strategic competition with China. Other recommendations in this year's USCC report include repealing the de minimis trade exemption that allows China goods under $800 to bypass tariffs with minimal paperwork and inspection, ending preferential capital gains treatment linked to Chinese companies on government watch lists, and requiring approval of Chinese involvement in biotechnology companies operating in the U.S. Commissioner Kimberly Glass said immediate elimination of the de minimis treatment for e-commerce goods is one of the most critical recommendations from the panel, considering the enormous volume of packages makes it difficult for Customs and Border Protection to stop the flow of dangerous products into the U.S., including fentanyl chemicals and pill presses. Just to give you a sense of the trajectory, it's 4 million boxes a day, estimated to be 1.4 billion de minimis shipments over this past year, according to CBP, Glass said. It is impossible to police what is in those boxes. In the 1930s, de minimis was created so we could bring back trinkets from abroad and not have to pay a tariff. In the e-commerce environment, it has become a funnel for Chinese products to receive duty-free, no-scrutiny treatment, she said. Now moving to some articles covering the West. California Health Department reports possible bird flu case in child. California's Public Health Department on Tuesday reported a possible case of bird flu in a child with mild respiratory symptoms, but said there is no evidence of human-to-human transmission of the virus and the child's family members tested negative. California officials said they have sent test specimens from the child to U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention for confirmation. A CDC spokesperson said the agency is aware of the presumptive positive case of H5 avian influenza, is collaborating with the state's investigation, and will provide further updates promptly. The agency has said the risk to the general public remains low. Although human infection has been rare, bird flu has infected 53 people since April, according to CDC. Most recently, a person in Oregon last week tied to a bird flu outbreak in a commercial poultry operation in the state. In Canada, officials earlier this month reported that a teen infected with bird flu in British Columbia was in critical condition. The child in California was in daycare with mild symptoms before the illness was reported, the state said. Local health officials have contracted potentially exposed caregivers and families to check for symptoms and offer preventive treatment and testing if they become symptomatic. The child and all close family members have been treated with preventive medication, the state said. The child had no known contact with an infected animal, but public health experts are investigating a possible exposure to wild birds. It's natural for people to be concerned, and we want to reinforce for parents, caregivers, and families that based on the information and data we have, we don't think the child was infectious, said California Health Department Director Dr. Thomas Aragon, adding, and no human-to-human spread of bird flu has been documented in any country for more than 15 years. Most U.S. bird flu cases, including 26 in California, have occurred among farm workers working with poultry or dairy cows that were infected with the virus. Because bird flu viruses can mutate and gain the ability to spread more easily between people, California public health officials said they are monitoring animal and human infections carefully. The state urged residents to avoid contact with sick or dead wild birds and renewed the warning against consuming raw milk or raw milk products, which have not undergone pasteurization to inactivate the bird flu virus and other harmful pathogens. Now moving to our next article, about 20% of Oregonians are at risk of PFAS contamination. About 800,000 Oregon residents might rely on private or public well water contaminated by toxic chemicals called forever chemicals, or PFAS, according to a federal study. Researchers with the U.S. Geological Survey analyzed more than 1,200 untreated groundwater samples across the country, then used those results to predict how surrounding regions may be affected. Results were published in late October. Compared to other states, Oregon ranks 25th for the number of people using water from public or private wells that are possibly contaminated with PFAS. Washington ranks 9th with an estimated 3.1 million people using potentially contaminated groundwater. Researchers published an interactive map showing the highest impact areas. Oregon shows concentration of affected water users along the Interstate 5 corridor where more people live. Nationally, more than half of people in the lower 48 states drink water that could contain traces of PFAS. That's a pretty striking number that I don't think they expected going in, said lead author and USGS researcher hydrologist Andrea Tukhanov. PFAS are man-made chemicals that don't break down, giving them the name forever chemicals. They accumulate in people's blood over time, increasing people's risk for cancer, high blood pressure, and other harmful health effects that scientists are still studying. Consumer product chemists create PFAS in the 1940s. The chemicals are often used as a surface coating due to their unique ability to repel oil, grease, and water. Lagging environmental regulations over the last 8 decades have allowed these toxins to make their way into a dizzying array of consumer products, including makeup, waterproof clothing, and nonstick cookware. A long list of polluters can contaminate surrounding water sources with PFAS. The four major sources are firefighting training sites, industrial sites, landfills, and wastewater treatment plants, or the resulting sewage called biosolids. The chemicals can travel through waterways or rain clouds. They seep into the ground, infiltrating aquifers that public and private wells tap. This study doesn't examine in detail at specific cities or zip codes, and it doesn't provide information about how many PFAS may be in those groundwater sources. Even so, Tokunov said it can help groundwater users to see if they're at higher risk. Our next article, same day voter registration hit a high in Washington. Long lines on election day aren't common in Washington with the state's vote-by-mail system, but in 2024, some counties were inundated with people taking advantage of a relatively new same-day registration system. Pierce County, for example, had hundreds of voters in line throughout election day. Traffic remained heavy all day at the county elections office and a drop box located there. Shinomish County's election official had a steady stream of people looking to register or change addresses. Many other counties, such as Clark, had people joining the lines at election offices up until the 8 p.m. voting deadline. Washington is one of 23 states that allows same-day registration. In this election, more voters than ever took advantage of it. About 13,400 new registrations were submitted on Election Day this year, according to the Secretary of State's office. Another 15,600 voters updated their registrations with things like address changes on the day of the election. That's compared to 10,300 new registrations and 7,500 registration updates on Election Day in 2020. Washington's same-day registrations have grown by leaps and bounds in the last 4 years, said Greg Tito, spokesperson at the Secretary of State's office. The legislature approved same-day voter registration in 2018. Before that law was passed, voters could complete in-person registration changes only until 8 days before an election and mail-in registration changes no later than 29 days before an election. Now moving to some international articles. Putin issues warning to the U.S. with new nuclear doctrine. Moscow. Russian President Vladimir Putin on Tuesday lowered the threshold for a nuclear strike in response to a broader range of conventional attack. Putin approved the change days after two U.S. officials and a source familiar with the decision said Sunday that U.S. President Joe Biden's administration allowed Ukraine to use U.S.-made weapons to strike deep into Russia. Russia had been warning the West for months that if Washington allows Ukraine to fire U.S., Britain, and France missiles, Moscow would consider those NATO members to be directly involved in the war in Ukraine. The updated Russian nuclear doctrine, establishing a framework for conditions under which Putin could order a strike from the world's biggest nuclear arsenal, was approved by him on Tuesday, according to a published decree. Analysts said the most notable change is Russia could consider a nuclear strike in response to a conventional attack on Russia or its ally Belarus that created a critical threat to their sovereignty and/or their territorial integrity. The big picture is that Russia is lowering the threshold for a nuclear strike in response to a possible conventional attack, said Alexander Graf, a senior researcher at Institute for Peace Research and Security Policy at University of Hamburg. The previous doctrine contained in a 2020 decree said Russia may, Russia may use nuclear weapons in case of a nuclear attack by an enemy or a conventional attack that threatened the existence of the state. U.S. National Security Council said it has not seen any reason to adjust the U.S. nuclear posture. Together, Russia and the U.S. control 88% of the world's nuclear warheads. Putin is the primary decision maker on the use of Russian nuclear arsenal. The doctrine says any attack by a non-nuclear power supported by a nuclear power would be considered a joint attack, and that any attack by one member of a military bloc would be considered an attack by the entire alliance. Russia's defense minister said Ukraine had struck Russia's Bryansk region with 6 missiles and that the air defense systems intercepted 5 and damaged 1. We will be taking this as a qualitative new phase of the Western war against Russia, and we will react accordingly, said Sergei Lavrov, Putin's foreign minister, adding that U.S. personnel and data must have been used in the ATACMS attack on Russia. Lavrov said Russia will do everything to avoid nuclear war. On the 1,000th day of the Ukrainian war, Russia also included a broader definition of the data that could be used to indicate Russia was under a mass attack from aircraft, cruise missiles, and unpiloted aircraft. The war is entering what some Russian and Western officials say could be its final and most dangerous phase, as Moscow forces advance at their fastest pace since the early weeks of the conflict, and the West ponders how the war will end. United Nations officials were not surprised by Russia's announced change in its nuclear doctrine and does not plan to adjust its nuclear posture in response, a White House National Security Council spokesperson said. Going to our next article, as troops talk continues, Lebanon's army cornered by politics and funding. Intensifying efforts for a truce in Lebanon have brought into focus the role of the country's army, which would be expected to keep the South free of Hezbollah weapons, but is neither willing nor able to confront the Iran-backed group, 7 sources said. Hezbollah, although weakened by Israel's year-long offensive, has long been stronger militarily than the Lebanese armed forces, which has stayed on the side of the conflict even after Israel sent ground forces into South Lebanon on October 1. Although the army will likely be required to deploy thousands of troops to the south after any ceasefire deal, it will need Hezbollah's nod to do so and will avoid confrontations that could trigger internal strife, said the sources, 3 people closest to the army and 4 diplomats, including from donor countries. The Lebanese army is in a situation that is sensitive and difficult. It cannot practice normal missions like the armies of other countries because there is another military force in the country, said retired Lebanese Brigadier General Hassan Najoni, referring to Hezbollah, which enjoys a semi-formal military status as a resistance force. This week, both the Lebanon government and Hezbollah agreed to a U.S. truce proposal, a senior Lebanese official told Reuters, while cautioning Lebanon still has comments on the draft. Hezbollah's approval is needed for any ceasefire to take effect, given its arsenal and sway over the Lebanese state. The United States is keen to see the army confront Hezbollah more directly, and shared that view with Lebanon officials, said 2 Western diplomats and 1 of the sources close to the army. But Hezbollah's military strength, its shares of Lebanon's cabinet and parliament, and the proportion of army troops who are Shiite Muslims mean that such a move would risk internal conflict, they said. Scenes of the army storming into houses looking for Hezbollah weapons would lead to a civil war, one of the diplomats said, arguing that the army could instead work alongside UN peacekeeping troops to patrol the south without confronting Hezbollah directly. Now, moving to our next article, Netflix exec very ready for Christmas games. Despite having viewers deal with frequent buffering low-quality feeds, and other stream-related issues during Jake Paul Mike Tyson boxing match, Netflix is prepared to prove its worth as a sports streaming service. Netflix will air two NFL games on Christmas Day, providing streams for meetings between the Kansas City Chiefs and Pittsburgh Steelers and Baltimore Ravens and Houston Texans. Beyonce is scheduled to perform during halftime of the Ravens-Texans game, which could create more severe traffic than Netflix will have to accommodate. We feel very ready and excited for the NFL on Christmas, Netflix content chief Bella Bajaria said, according to the Wall Street Journal. 60 million viewers tuned into Netflix for the Paul Tyson fight, with Downdetector.com, which tracks service outages, and announced that 90,000 issues were reported. This unprecedented scale created many technical challenges, which the launch team tackled brilliantly by prioritizing stability of the stream for the majority of viewers, Netflix Chief Technology Officer Elizabeth Stone wrote in a memo issued to the company following the bout, according to a reporter at Bloomberg. We don't want to dismiss the poor experience of some members, and know we have room for improvement, but still considering this event a huge success. CBS Sports will assist with production on Christmas Day, but Netflix is responsible for how the viewing experience unfolds. Our next article, Federer pens tribute to retiring Nadal. Roger Federer paid tribute to his retiring rival, Rafa Nadal, on Tuesday, saying Nadal challenged him like no other player and that he had made the tennis world proud during a glittering career that spanned two decades. Nadal is part of the Spain side that will begin their Davis Cup champion against the Netherlands, with the injury-plagued 22 times Grand Slam champion set to call time on his career after the team competition in Malaga. Federer, who was part of the big three of men's tennis alongside Nadal and Novak Djokovic, posted a letter on X reflecting on his rivalry with the 38-year-old. Now moving to some business articles. Walmart raises annual forecast. Walmart on Tuesday raised its annual sales and profit forecast for the third consecutive time as people bought more groceries and merchandise. It's a sign the world's largest retailer continues to gain market share in advance of the holidays. Shares of Walmart, which are up nearly 60% in 2024, climbed as much as 4.5% to a record high of $87.88 in early trading Tuesday. The retailer is among the first major U.S. chains to provide insight into the holiday quarter and how consumers are planning to spend as inflation ebbs. In the U.S., in-store volume grew, pickup from store grew faster, and delivery from store grew even faster than that, Walmart CEO Doug McMillon said. Although inflation has not made much headway in recent months, it is on a downward trend, raising purchasing power. Walmart said it saw share gains across income cohorts, mainly led by upper-income households, which make more than $100,000 in annual income. The retail bellwether now forecasts fiscal 2025 consolidated net sales to rise in the range of 4.8% to 5.1%, compared with prior expectations of 3.75%. to 4.75% growth. It also expects annual adjusted profit per share to be between 2.42 and 2.47, compared with its previous forecast of 2.35 and 2.43. Retailers, including Walmart, Amazon.com, and Target, kicked off the holiday shopping season earlier than usual, offering deals on everything from toys to household items. Walmart and Target stocked more private label brands and upped their grocery offerings as consumers seek to purchase essentials and gifts at the lowest price possible. The majority of our customers are maintaining their holiday plans year over year amidst the election, the calendar shift, the economy backdrop, Walmart said. Donald Trump's victory in 2024 U.S. presidential election could affect some shoppers, said Minkyung Kim, assistant professor of marketing at Carnegie Mellon University's School of Business. Trump's tariffs on imports, if implemented in 2025, could raise prices on clothing, toys, furniture, appliances, footwear, and travel goods, according to National Retail Federation. We're concerned that significantly increased tariffs could lead to increased costs for our customers at a time when they are still feeling the remnants of inflation, a Walmart spokesperson said. We never want to raise prices. We will work with government officials and our supplier to minimize the impact on our customers. Moving to our next article, Stellantis unveils technology to support flexible EV production. Stellantis said Tuesday it will deploy new vehicle system that will support assembly of gasoline, hybrid, and electric models. But in a sign of how turbulent the electric vehicle transition is, the automaker delayed production of Ram electric pickup trucks. The company revealed details about its STLA frame platform, which will support full-size trucks and SUVs. Platforms are viewed as a skateboard on which many different types of vehicles can be built and include important electrical and mechanical components of the car. We are very focused on the execution of our plan, despite all the difficult challenges that the industry is facing, said CEO Carlos Tavares on a call with reporters. Tavares said automaker is delaying production of its electric Ram pickups until the first half of 2025 from this year, citing the need to ensure quality. We are just facing a very significant amount of workload, he said. Automakers in Detroit and elsewhere rushed into building EV manufacturing capacity over the past 2 years, only for demand to grow more slowly than anticipated. The decision of whether to focus on platforms that support EVs versus those that include flexibility for hybrids or gasoline-powered vehicles has split automakers. Ford Motor has leaned into selling hybrid vehicles, while General Motors has focused on battery-powered models after investing more upfront into building its own EV platform. GM will start offering plug-in hybrids in 2027, it said. Stellantis is mainly offering plug-in hybrids in the U.S. for now, but plans to ramp up EV sales in the coming years, chasing a goal of 100% battery electric car sales in Europe and 50% electric passenger car and light-duty truck sales in the U.S. by 2030. The global industry faces even greater uncertainty around EV demand if U.S. President-elect Donald Trump carries out plans to unravel various incentives around EV production and sales. In our next article, the dollar higher, boost to safe haven currency fades. The dollar index rose on Tuesday after an initial boost to safe haven currency, such as the greenback, Swiss franc, and yen, prompted by an announcement by Russia that it would lower its threshold for a nuclear strike, faded following comments by Russia and U.S. officials. The dollar index, which measures the greenback against a basket of currencies, climbed 0.03% to 106.25 after reaching a high of 106.63 in the session, with the euro down 0.12% at 1.0587. Our next article, get more rest during holiday travel. During holiday season, there never seems to be enough hours in the day. Calendars are jam-packed with all sorts of activities, from the moment Thanksgiving arrives until revelers scream Happy New Year. Travel also is a common component of the holiday season, as millions cross time zones in order to see loved ones each December. Rest does not always come easy while away from home. A number of factors can contribute to this inability to settle. In an unfamiliar place, our brains become instinctively more alert, increasing adrenaline to keep us awake and ready to defend ourselves or our loved ones, said Martin Seeley, CEO of Mattress Next Day in the United Kingdom. This flight response may be even stronger when traveling with family. People have a lot on their minds and tasks to get done in a short period of time during the holiday season. It can be challenging to wind down and find rest when one is so frequently on the move. It is possible to get more rest for those who plan accordingly. Here are some tips for getting some relief while traveling for the holidays. Bring familiar items from home. It is not just children who can benefit from some comforting items from home. Adults also can enjoy the benefits of familiar pillows and blankets, for example. Aromas are strongly associated with familiarity and triggering memories. So a pillowcase that smells like a home laundry detergent can trigger the body to relax. Use noise-canceling earplugs or headphones. Unfamiliar noises can interrupt rest and sleep. Using noise-canceling products or listening to white noise while settling down to rest can induce sleep. Follow the two-day rule. Johns Hopkins Medicine recommends those who will be staying somewhere for fewer than 2 days to try to keep to a typical schedule. By the time your body adapts to a different schedule, it will be time to come home again. Don't overfill your schedule. It's tempting to try to do too much during holiday visits, but jamming your schedule could lead to additional fatigue. That could translate into not enjoying yourself as much as possible because you're simply too tired. Avoid too much alcohol. Some people indulge a bit too much while celebrating the holidays. Although alcohol initially can make you feel sleepy, it leads to poor sleep quality and eventually can wake you up in the middle of the night or contribute to a restless few hours of sleep. Limit drinking, especially late at night. Put away electronics. Lori Headley, a sleep educator at Valley Sleep Center in Arizona, says the blue light emitted from many digital devices can disrupt the circadian rhythm in your body that regulates sleep and wake. When the sun begins to set, turn off devices and stick to darker rooms to begin to set the body up for rest. This is a great time to gather in a room filled with firelight or candlelight. Move your body. Be active during the day, even when you are traveling for the holidays. Physical exertion is good for the mind and the body and may help you get better rest each night. Moving to our next article, more states embrace stricter approach to crime. The outcome of 7 ballot measures in Arizona, California, and Colorado reflect the stricter approach to crime that has occurred throughout the U.S. Voters and policymakers are driven by concern over rising retail theft, homelessness, fentanyl misuse, and challenges in police recruiting and retention. Voters have decided they prefer to adopt progressive changes to the criminal justice system somewhat less aggressively, said Dan Scherner, a former Republican strategist and a political communications professor at the University of Southern California and University of California, Berkeley. Voters are always course correctors. They're always adjusting and readjusting, trying to calibrate policy exactly where they want it, Scherner said. It's not uncommon for them to try to pull back on a reform effort that they think might be going too far. In 2024, local and state leaders in both blue and red states, including California, Georgia, Louisiana, Oregon, Tennessee, and Vermont, made a shift from more liberal initiatives aimed at curtailing police power and reimagining criminal legal systems. Instead, they have embraced harsher penalties for offenses such as retail theft and possession or distribution of certain hard drugs, added felony and misdemeanor offenses requiring cash bail, and moved to prohibit local governments from altering police traffic stop policies. In Arizona, California, and Colorado, overwhelmingly backed ballot measures to increase prison time for certain crimes, revoke bail for others, and curb illegal immigration and drug trafficking. Although national crime data typically is difficult to track and understand, violent crime and property crime across the United States decreased in 2023, continuing a downward trend since the higher crime rates of the COVID-19 pandemic, according to FBI's latest national crime report. Even so, some individual cities and neighborhoods might be encountering higher crime rates. That could explain views on the subject. Opinions on crime in the United States have improved over the past year, according to Gallup's annual crime survey. Fewer people believe national crime has increased or consider crime an extremely or very serious problem, but a majority of U.S. adults, 56%, still do. Perceptions are heavily influenced by political affiliation, the survey showed. While 60% of Democrats believe crime has gone down over the past year, 90% of Republicans think it has increased. In California, voters overwhelmingly approved Proposition 36, a measure that increases penalties for specific drug-related and theft crimes, and that also reclassifies certain drug offenses as treatment-mandated felonies. This reclassification will allow judges to impose mental health or drug treatment requirements. Those who complete treatment would have their charges dismissed, while those who fail to meet the requirements could face up to 3 years in prison. It's not the hope or the intention to send a bunch of people to jail or prison who are using drugs. The goal is to motivate people to engage in treatment again, said Yolo County District Attorney Jeff Reisling, one of the measure's authors, in an interview with Stateline. The measure aims to address issues such as retail theft, homelessness, substance use disorders, and fentanyl distribution. Under the new law, people convicted of theft at least twice may face felony charges on their third offense, regardless of the stolen item's value. Additionally, those caught distributing fentanyl while armed with a loaded firearm will now face felony charges and up to 4 years in prison. Previously, possessing felony and a loaded firearm was punishable by up to 1 year in jail. Our strong belief is that this will send a deterrent message to others that there are consequences again. The measure also receives substantial support from law enforcement agencies across the state, although it remains unclear how departments might adjust their enforcement policies. Reisling said the measure will provide law enforcement with some real meaningful tools to address specific crimes. With options for increased sentencing and mandatory treatment, Proposition 36 could provide tools to address repeat offenses more effectively, Sacramento Police Spokesperson Sergeant Dan Weissman wrote in an email to Stateline. Proposition 36 partially reverses some changes made in 2014 by another ballot measure, Proposition 47, that reduced certain theft and drug crimes from felonies to misdemeanors to address prison overcrowding. But Reisling said this is not a complete rollback. It was drafted to be more down the middle and just kind of bringing the pendulum back to the center mass, he said. We're not reinventing the wheel. We're just bringing back some things that had proven success, and I think all of California is going to benefit. Some criminal justice advocacy groups have argued that the measure could reintroduce drug war policies and result in longer prison sentences. California voters also rejected Prop Proposition 6 by a close margin, 53% to 47%. The measure would have amended the state constitution to prohibit forcing inmates into labor as punishment. The proposal originated from a state task force examining whether California should provide reparations to Black residents. In contrast, voters in more conservative states, such as Alabama and Tennessee, have approved measures in recent elections to abolish involuntary servitude in their prisons. In a similar effort, Nevada voters this year approved a measure repealing constitutional language that permitted slavery and involuntary servitude as forms of criminal punishment. Schooner said Proposition 6 could have been rejected in part because California voters might have carried anti-criminal sentiment over from one ballot measure to the other. Because Proposition 36 passed by such a large margin, it's entirely possible that many voters were already thinking in a more restrictive way about criminal justice policy, and those feelings may have moved over into their vote against Proposition 6, Sooner said. In Colorado, voters overwhelmingly approved a constitutional amendment put on the ballot by the state legislature that makes first-degree murder suspects ineligible for bail if prosecutors can demonstrate a strong enough case. Previously, the state constitution allowed only people charged with capital offense to be denied bail. This change restores bail policies that were in place before Colorado repealed the death penalty in 2020. Voters also backed a pair of measures placed on the ballot through a signature gathering campaign led by Advance Colorado, a conservative political group. One measure requires people convicted of certain violent crimes, including second-degree murder, aggravated robbery, and sexual assault, to serve at least 85% of their sentence, up from the previous 75%, before becoming eligible for parole. Thank you for joining us. Listen Tuesday through Friday at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 1 p.m. for more news from the Arizona Daily Sun. I'm Gary, wishing you a good night.